We are on the front page of your outline, chapter 17, and I see Dr. Imad Shahadi, and your wife's name is Julia. You're with us, and Fred Beasley. Thank you for the question and answer in the service this morning. Thank you for your work as president of Jordan Evangelical Theological Seminary in Amman, Jordan, and it's an honor to have you with us. I think you probably just came out of... All right. Could you stand up? Yeah. Thank you for your work. I thought maybe I should bring that in. I got I have now at home on a shelf the 3-volume complete Arabic translation of my book, Systematic Theology, which you have been instrumental in encouraging and promoting. So thank you very much. Yes, good. Appreciate that and that you're able to use it. Yeah, good. Okay. Now, if you have been here with me for the last... Has it been 2 years that we've been talking about this topic of politics according to the Bible? This week's lesson will all make sense. If you are a first-time visitor and you have not been with me for all these past weeks, like Chris, I met here this morning, this is going to seem a little bit strange. Because all I'm going to do is give you conclusions and not arguments. I've got the tape recordings, you know, on the website now with 50 or 60 weeks of lessons and arguments. But I'm going to say, let's put this all together and see where do the Democratic Party and the Republican Party supporters line up with regard to these biblical principles and how they work out in specific application to issues. And the first thing that I want to say at the top, point A, differing fundamental principles between Republicans and Democrats make nonpartisanship difficult today because the parties have become so different in what they advocate. Now, I want to point out something else for the sake of fairness. There is a book that I mention here in point one of the outline, Jim Wallis, God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. The title implies that it's a nonpartisan book, but the content says otherwise. Basically, Jim Wallis says, if you are a Christian, you need to vote for Democrats all the time. I mean, that's his argument. Why does he do that? Point B, he's a pacifist. He's against the Iraq War. He's against capital punishment. He says the solution to poverty is government redistribution of wealth, and so he's for higher taxes and bigger government and more government control of who earns what. And he says on abortion and homosexual conduct, he said, well, yes, you know, I think we should reduce the number of abortions by helping unwed mothers. And homosexual conduct, well... Churches need to kind of come to some agreement that different views on this can be tolerated within the church. And he even says probably churches should consider giving blessing to same-sex unions. And he says, what about a pro-life position? All these people saying if you're pro-life, you should be Republican. He says, if you are truly pro-life means you'll help the poor. And so you want to have more government help for the poor, therefore you should be a Democrat. So I'm just saying, if you want an alternative position to the viewpoints on many issues that I've been supporting here, I recommend, and I recommend in my book, that people read Jim Wallis's book too. Consider what he's arguing, consider how he looks to some different verses in the Bible to support his viewpoint, and see if you think it's persuasive. I just say that to say... it's not true that all Christians in the world say that, or in the United States, say you have to vote for Republicans. Here's a Christian, and others follow him from the that segment of the evangelical world, and they're saying basically that Christians should vote for Democrats. I want you to be aware of that, and I think this is a free country, and I think that ideas can compete with each other and people can give their different viewpoints, and then it's up to you to decide. And people decide and they vote. But I say on number two, by contrast, my book, Politics According to the Bible, takes a different view than Jim Wallace on these and other issues. Sometimes I disagree with Republicans. I disagree with the high spending that happened in President Bush's administration, for instance, even when Republicans were in control of Congress. But for the most part, the conclusions that I'm going to give today, and maybe it'll spill over a little bit into next Sunday, are that Republicans, for the most part, seem in their positions to be more consistent with biblical teachings than the Democrat positions. Now, there's one other point I'll bring up here, number three, and that is people say, well, you know what? I don't care about parties. I just want to listen to the candidate. I'm going to vote for the candidate and not the party. And I've heard people say that. The problem is, I think that argument is naive. It doesn't understand that laws in our system of government, laws are not passed by individual candidates. Laws are only passed by parties. And so what is getting on the agenda for laws to be passed in the United States House of Representatives today? It's Republican laws. Because Republicans are in a majority in the House of Representatives, the majority elects the Speaker of the House, and they set the legislative agenda. So that's all that's coming to the House is stuff that the Republicans approve. But what about the U.S. Senate? There's a Democratic majority in the Senate, so the only things that get on the agenda in the U.S. Senate are things that are approved by Harry Reid, the Speaker of the Senate, Speaker of the House. It's the majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid. So John Boehner in the House is the Speaker of the House. He sets the legislative agenda there. What he wants to get passed and the Republicans support, that's what gets passed. In the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, sets the agenda. And if he doesn't want stuff on the agenda, it doesn't get on it. So individuals don't pass laws in our country. Parties pass laws. So what I'm saying is every vote for every individual candidate is a vote either for the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. Does that make sense? And it's voting to support the general principles that those parties support. Now you say, well, what about Joseph Lieberman, who's an independent? Well, he votes with the Democrats. Okay. And that reminds me about 3 or 4 months ago when I was praying for government officials. I prayed for God's help for Vice President Lieberman. And I had about 5 people tell me afterward, no, it's Joe Biden. I know that. But yeah, you try praying publicly a lot of times. So see if you don't make any mistakes. Okay. All right. But the basic point stands. Individual candidates don't make laws. You're voting for a party. And you want to vote for candidates that are most consistent with the dominant views in the party if you can. And the individual candidates do affect to some extent what their party does. And so in that way, you want to vote for the candidate that moves his party or her party in the direction you most want to see it move. Okay, then what are the differences in the parties? Here's a really quick summary. Number four, Republicans strongly tend toward smaller government, lower taxes, strong military defense, traditional moral standards regarding abortion and the definition of marriage as between one man and one woman, promotion of democracy, and promotion of free market economies. Democrats, especially in the last 5 or 10 years, strongly tend toward larger government, higher taxes, reliance on negotiation rather than superior force in dealing with enemies, opposition to biblical moral standards regarding abortion and homosexual marriage, and promotion of socialist-leaning economic policies, an economy that is highly controlled by the government. Now, those are just quick overviews. Now, I want to go through a whole lot of chapters and talk about specific issues. Number five, chapter five, which point B, the courts and ultimate power in a nation. I said that I think the largest problem facing our nation is the excessive power of the Supreme Court and judges making laws rather than just interpreting laws. It seems to me our democratic republic, the system of government, given to us by our founding fathers and established in the Constitution, that system is broken because the major decisions in the country are no longer made by elected officials. They're made by the Supreme Court. Point C, Democrats favor appointing Supreme Court justices who make laws rather than interpreting and applying laws as was intended by the founding fathers. By contrast, D, most Republicans favor appointing justices who will judge according to the original public meaning of the laws, or what's sometimes called originalism or original intent, and the state and federal constitutions to which they are subject. It seems to me that consistent election of Republican candidates will help ensure appointment of originalist justices and solve what I still think is the biggest problem facing our nation today. Point C, protection of life. That's chapter 6. Abortion, I argued, is the intentional taking of human life and should be prohibited by law. Why? Because Exodus 20 says, you shall not murder. And murder of an unborn child is, I think, murder, wrongly taking a human life. Democrats favor a woman's right to choose. Republicans favor laws prohibiting abortion except to save the life of the mother. By and large, now you say there are individual pro-life Democrats, Senator Manchin from West Virginia, a very conservative rural area voting for him, for example. There are, but they can't affect legislation because they're still supporting Harry Reid as Speaker of the U.S. House, or U.S. Senate. And in fact, no one can rise to national leadership in the Democratic Party today and be pro-life. No one. It's impossible. And even this book by Jim Wallace, though he says we should help unwed mothers, he will not say we should have laws protecting the lives of unborn children. That's the issue. What should the law be? And he won't say that. On the other hand, now, there are people like Rudy Giuliani, who's pro-choice, and he has some visibility in the Republican kind of party in the United States. But Rudy Giuliani is not going to win the nomination for president of the United States, nor is any pro-choice or pro-abortion candidate going to win on the Republican side in a position of national leadership. The parties have just separated on that issue. Euthanasia, C2. On abortion. Abortion laws ultimately can only be implemented by reversal of Roe v. Wade, and that requires original intent Supreme Court justices before it will happen. Euthanasia, prohibited by biblical commands against murder. More liberal Democrats favor liberalization of euthanasia laws, but not all. Some Democrats oppose this. Nearly all Republicans oppose allowing euthanasia, at least at the national leadership level. Number 3, capital punishment. I argued that the Bible supports the government's right to carry out capital punishment, at least for premeditated murder. Interestingly, both parties support this view, but not by the same numbers. 52% of Democrats support capital punishment, and 78% of Republicans, 66% of independents support capital punishment. Firearms ownership. I argued that the Bible supports allowing an effective means of self-defense, and Peter, in fact, after being with Jesus for 3 years, was still carrying a sword. Swords were used for self-defense in the ancient world. Republicans, by a large proportion, favor citizen firearms rights. However, 60% of Democrats favor stricter gun control laws versus 13% of Republicans. And in other nations, liberal parties of other nations generally are opposed to all private gun ownership. Point D, marriage. I argued that the Bible restricts marriage to one man and one woman, Genesis 1 and 2. God created Adam and Eve in his own image, and then it says in Genesis 2, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. God called Adam and Eve husband and wife, or man and wife. God established marriage as between one man and one woman. That seemed to me to be the biblical perspective, and there were many benefits to society that come from that. Republicans tend to strongly support that definition of marriage. Some Democrats support that definition of marriage, but the party as a whole does not. And I printed out this past week on May 31st, President Obama issued a proclamation designating the month of June, this month, as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month by proclamation of the President of the United States. In witness thereof, I have set my hand this first day of June in the year of our Lord, 2009, and then it was repeated 2010 and again this past month. Barack Obama, President of the United States. Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month, it seems to me that is promoting a view of human sexuality and marriage which is contrary to biblical standards. More than 7 in 10 liberal Democrats, 72%, favor same-sex marriage. 8 in 10 conservative Republicans, or 81%, oppose it. That's a difference between the parties. I'm not going to be able, because of time, to cover every topic here, but I'm going to skip down point E, the family. What I advocated in chapter 8 was the Bible views bearing of children as a blessing from God to be approved and encouraged. Genesis 1:28, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Taking just a pause here, I see Bob Kane in the back. Where's George Ann? 50th wedding anniversary this Tuesday. Did I hear that? Is that right, George Ann? What's that? She was a child bride. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. Congratulations. Oh, okay. All right. We're watching time. All right. Actually, Wayne and Margaret Grudem have 42nd wedding anniversary tomorrow. So, also a child bride. All right. Where are we? Oh, we're on the family. Very interesting. Point 1B, in general, I argued that parents have the primary right to determine the kind of education that their children receive, because again and again and again, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. And my son, obey your father's teaching, and do not forsake your mother's training. And all of these passages from Proverbs, it's father and mother who are supposed to train the children, not government. So I argue for more parental control in what schools teach. I argued point C, states should not remove the right of parents to discipline their children, including spanking, not to physically harm the child, but to cause the child to change his or her mind on some behavioral issue. Point D, it seemed to me a voucher system to pay for tuition, where the state would give every family a $4,000 voucher, a $6,000 voucher. You use it any school you want to, private, public, Christian, Jewish, whatever, charter school, that would lead to higher quality in education, greater choice, and more competition. Number two, on the above positions, Democrats tend to place the views of the government and teachers over parents in deciding what schools should teach. Republicans largely believe parental views should take priority. Opposition to physical discipline comes almost entirely from Democrats, a more liberal wing of the Democratic Party, seeking at times to outlaw spanking. Opposition to vouchers comes almost entirely from Democrats because of the political clout of the National Education Association, but Republicans tend to favor protection of parental rights, the right to exercise physical discipline, and voucher programs, which are gaining in popularity. And Indiana, I think it was, passed a statewide voucher system, and I think that's a growing trend among states, and it's going to really help, I think, correct the problems with our and children's educational systems. Point F, economic policies. The Bible supports a system of private ownership of property and emphasis on a free market. And incidentally, this Friday and Saturday, Barry Asmus and I are scheduled to be in Philadelphia at a conference on business ethics. And we are doing two presentations on the Eighth Commandment, you shall not steal, arguing that inherent in the Eighth Commandment is an assumption of private property or property rights and stewardship and a market system. Once you understand the system of property ownership and you shall not steal that's in the Old Testament, and affirmed in the New Testament. So you remember to pray for us for that, and Margaret and Mandy will be with us at that conference. The Bible supports an emphasis on private ownership of property and, I believe, a free market. Democrats favor more government regulation of private property in the economy, more income redistribution through higher taxes. Republicans favor protection, more protection of property rights and free markets and competition. I'll skip down to number three. Concerning the rich and the poor, Democrats tend to use rhetoric portraying the rich as evil, and they tend to support redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor, especially through tax laws. And that is Jim Wallace's claim. If you care for the poor, you'll have... I mean, I see it as basically the Democrats love to spend other people's money and give it to the poor, and thinking that'll help. And the argument on contrast to that, Republicans tend to favor individual freedom, allowing all, rich or poor, to keep the fruits of their labor. And for Republicans, wealthy people shouldn't automatically be viewed as evil, but have created economic good for society, and for them to have personal benefit from it is acceptable and good. The Republicans generally promote equal opportunity, not equal outcomes, and emphasize creation of jobs and saying the real solution to poverty is for people to have jobs that will by which they will be able to support themselves rather than continually remain dependent on government and government handouts. So there's a difference in approach. I argued that lower taxes are better for an economy and provide freedom for people to decide how their own money is used. And so I'm arguing that from Romans 13:4, where the civil government is God's servant for your good, civil government should seek to do good for the society, and lower taxes do good for society because it leaves us more of our own money to spend. And that means we have more freedom with our lives and with the choices of what we do. Democrats consistently increase state and federal taxes when in power. For example, in California and New York, both of which states are completely running out of money. By contrast, Republicans in control in Texas, say, have lowered taxes and passed more business-friendly climate, and the economy in Texas is growing amazingly. Republicans tend to decrease taxes permanently for the entire nation, not just for certain groups. Now, I think if you're listening to campaign arguments back and forth on tax cuts and things like this, what counts is permanent change in the tax rates, long-term tax cut. A one-month or six-month or one-year tax cut doesn't affect long-term business planning because the business owner says, what's 1 year going to do for me? I want to plan out 2 or 3 or 4 years. I want to know what return I'm going to get from my money in 2012, 2013, 2014. And so watch who is saying permanent reduction in tax rates, not just, oh, here's a tax cut for, I'll give you a tax credit for a one-time payment of $3,000, $6,000, or here's a tax credit for changing your old auto for a new auto, or here's a tax credit for buying a new house, or something like that. That's Democrat philosophy. Give a tiny little bit and then go back to the high rate. That doesn't change business behavior. Changing business behavior comes when people can plan long-term on permanent reduction of tax rates overall, and that's what Republicans have generally promoted. I'm watching the time. What am I going to do? I don't know. Point five, a competitive market for health care provides better health care than any government-run or government-managed system. Margaret and I have a fairly good friend who needed a hip replacement. Now, didn't you have a hip replacement, Mike? And I saw you just kind of walking off this platform just fine, and you bent down, picked up a pen just fine. Mike got a hip replacement. How long did you have to wait to get that hip replacement?
The time I
decided to do it.
Seven
weeks. And you could have done it earlier, if it was an emergency, because
yes.
I know my mother had a hip replacement in one day because she had fallen and needed it. But you waited 7 weeks for just a scheduling situation. We have a friend in Canada who has been limping and waiting for hip replacement for 8 years. It's free, if you can get it. A competitive market for healthcare, and your hip works. Good, thanks, Mike. Provides better healthcare than any government-run or managed system. Free market health care, therefore, is best, but there are some provisions that should be implemented. Elimination of state mandates to individual states saying you've got to cover all these, everybody has to have this Cadillac care. Limit of malpractice awards, purchases across state lines, giving tax breaks to individual purchasers. There are changes that need to be made, but the free market system still today provides the United States with the best health care in the world. Republicans tend to favor the present system, while Democrats with Obama's health care have favored a much more government-managed system where if you start it, it's going to be rationing of health care and long waits. That's a big political question now. All right. Point G, the environment. God created a resourceful earth with abundant resources of every kind. Genesis 1:31, God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Therefore, my approach to the world and to the use of resources in the world is, the world is very good, it's filled with abundant resources, and I had a lot of statistical material to back that up when we talked about this. We have abundant oil, natural gas, coal, resources to last us for hundreds and hundreds of years, and nuclear energy resources to last us for hundreds or thousands of years. All of these energy-producing resources make products and the cost of living less expensive and so increase personal freedom. But Democrats tend to block the use of many of these energy resources to prevent drilling for oil offshore and in Alaska, to block nuclear power stations from being built, etc. Republicans, by contrast, have favored the development of the above energy resources. Again, the Wall Street Journal this week had an article. Conservatives had said, drill for oil in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR, A-N-W-R. Democrats have said, oh, if we drill now, it'll take 10 years to get that oil to market, and oh, no, it won't really affect the price of oil that much. Article in the Wall Street Journal said, the price of oil is determined by expectations of the future. So if drilling in ANWR were approved today, the price of oil would drop dramatically tomorrow, and your price of gas at the pump would drop dramatically within a very short time, because people would expect there's abundant future supply coming. And the illustration that they gave is in the Arab oil embargo, I think in 1973, the total production of oil hardly changed at all, but the expectation that there wasn't going to be as much oil changed dramatically, and the price of oil just like doubled or tripled within a day. Why? Because it's expectations that create the price, or of a major factor in the price. Well, Republicans have favored the development of these energy resources, thinking that, from my perspective, that God has put these abundant resources in the earth for our benefit. And energy replaces what? Human work. That's why you drive a car to church rather than riding a bicycle. Now, if you want to ride a bicycle, fine, but there's more human work involved with it. If you drive a car, you use energy, and you... Does it make sense? All right. Well, so abundant Earth. Number two, human production of carbon dioxide likely has no significant effect on the Earth's temperature. Democrats favor reducing carbon output because of fears of global warming, and I think this will reduce our standard of living and give great increase in costs. Republicans generally have argued that trying to reduce carbon dioxide is prohibitively expensive. It's harmful to the poor, creates massive increases in government control of our lives. It's a waste of money and effort as well, because it really doesn't have any significant effect on climate. Page three, CAFE standards. Corporate average fuel economy standards for automobiles. You have to get more and more miles per gallon. And as I said, if you want to get 200 miles per gallon, drive a go-kart. And you can do that, but people don't want to because you can't haul things in a go-kart and it's not as safe. But these CAFE standards, generally supported by Democrats and generally opposed by Republicans, they do more harm than good, although those standards have been massively increased by President Obama's pressure and negotiation with the automakers early in his term. These standards force people to drive smaller, more dangerous cars, resulting in more injuries and fatalities. Cap and trade is an attempt to force a reduction in energy use on a nation, will decrease production and raise prices. Again, there's a difference between Republican and Democratic policies in this area. It seems that Republicans are favoring policies that are good for the nation. Democrats are favoring policies that are driven by fear of harming the earth, which I think is not based on reason or fact in a sensible analysis. There are differences in policies. Now, national defense. Why don't I stop right here, because we have a few minutes for interaction. But look where I'm going. H, national defense. I, relations with other nations. And then a couple of other things. And then when I get to the end of point four, page four, letter N, why? Why do the two parties adopt these different policies? That's what I'm headed for. What are the deep reasons and deep assumptions and deep patterns of thought that lead Democrats and Republicans to adopt different policies on these issues? I have six points that I want to get to. That'll be the beginning of class next week. Okay, we have about 6 or 7 minutes for interaction if you want to. Tell me your name.
Don,
yeah.
Yeah, have you received any feedback from your publisher or directly regarding your book from a liberal viewpoint?
Have I received feedback from a liberal viewpoint for my book? Almost none. The response, Don, from people who have gotten the book and read it has been amazingly positive. It surprised me. Now, I haven't heard from Jim Wallace. I met him once in London at a meeting we were both speaking at. No, I haven't. Amazon.com has, you know, reader reviews, and there are a couple of, oh, Grudem just didn't give good arguments. He just had his own assumptions and pretended to use the Bible. I mean, they were just kind of a superficial statement. But basically, the response has been very positive.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because, you know, since they don't have the Bible as a book of truth, mm-hmm. a lot of times in a discussion, they will tend to get into an emotional state and try and argue from that standpoint. And then they end up just dismissing our point of view as irrelevant because it doesn't fit their life at all.
Okay.
And then the last question, help me understand how a born-again Christian can embrace liberal attitudes.
Well, it's Jim Wallace's argument. It's if you care for the poor, if you care for the environment, and if you're a peacemaker and you don't want to use military force, I mean, it's those arguments. Now, I don't find them persuasive, but some people do. That's where. Okay, other comments here. Yeah, okay. Bob, in the back.
Dr. Grudem, I missed the section on legalized gambling, but did you have any comparative studies showing the extent to which legalizing gambling increased the percentage of problem gamblers or addicts?
No, there's a little bit in that Focus on the Family handout in the last two pages, but it does. I think. Now, you're a lawyer, Bob, and you maybe know more about this than I do.
No, I don't have any contrary statistics, but it seemed to me that most of the arguments in that Focus on the Family piece assumed that legalizing gambling created all those problems.
Yep.
But we know we legalized it in response to the fact that the mafia and the underground tended to run the gambling and profit wildly from it before it was legalized.
To a much lesser extent, though. The parking lots aren't filled with hundreds of cars.
But no comparative data to show.
In mafia gambling? No, I don't. Didn't go into it in that detail. Sorry. Mike Mobley here.
Yeah, Wayne, this is a bit of an encouragement that maybe you ought to think about another edition of your book that maybe is more focused on some of the other political institutions or other countries in the world. I know that it's a burden you and Barry have, but you were talking about Wallace's book, and you, like Kathy and I, have lived in the UK for a while. And our observation there was, again, most of the evangelical Christians are extremely liberal there, and you probably have done
more
that.
More than
for,
here. Yeah.
Much more than here, and they come across and they don't understand conservative Christians in the United
yep.
States simply because they have a strong passion for the poor, for social justice, and a lot of other things that's
yep.
taught in the churches.
Yep.
And so they generally just absolutely lean to,
yep.
you know, the labor parties and or the more socialist views
yep.
there, and that they view that as absolutely consistent with
yep.
their views. And basically, they've embraced Jim Wallace's point of view. And I know your book is very centric upon the United States and
yep.
our Constitution and the basis for that.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a whole other Christian community out there that, you know, would probably benefit from the, you know, sound
yep.
biblical focus that you brought and making their contrast be seen a socially responsible point
yep.
of view.
Okay. This is a question, Mike. I maybe you remember a year ago I did a 6-city speaking tour in England sponsored by the Christian Institute. It's basically the whole nation equivalent in England of the Center for Arizona Policy here. It's a Christian lobbying group. They promoted my speaking. My book wasn't published, and basically I was just talking about the first two chapters, Christians Should Get Involved in Influencing Government for Good. What the director of that institute told me after kind of seeing a detailed outline of what I was holding, he said, the conservative Christians in England would basically stand with you on all these issues except guns, gun ownership, that's thought to be negative in England, and the National Health Service. Because people in England love the National Health Service overall. It is also the largest employer, not in England. The National Health Service in England is the largest employer in all of Europe. So everybody knows somebody who works for it, or they work for it themselves. But anyway, they like it. So there's a difference there. In Brazil, where I was a few months ago, the publisher of my systematic theology there, they've sold 30,000 copies of my systematic theology, which is a big number if we're in Portuguese in Brazil. They were interested in the book. They got it. They looked through it and said, oh, could we publish the first 4 chapters only, which is just Christians should be involved in government. Here's a biblical view of government and Christian worldview. But they didn't want to do any of the specific issues. Why? Because they thought it was too conservative for the Christian market in Brazil. Isn't that interesting? So I went back to Zondervan and said, no, I don't want to publish just the first 4 chapters. I want to publish the whole book. So we'll see. And so I suggested to Zondervan, try another publisher for a Portuguese edition. But Mike, when I was writing this book, I had in mind Christians in other countries that I'd met with, and I thought, I'm hoping that they'll see these principles and see, these are principles that I think apply to governments in all nations. But it's just that the political mood, even for Christians in a number of those countries, is much more liberal, by and large. Yeah. 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 It's interesting. There's one more. Go ahead, and then it'll be done.
Hi, I.
What's your name?
Oh, it's Rick Holman.
Rick?
Yeah. I appreciate how you've described, in theory, the difference between Republicans and Democrats, but I'm wondering if has enough time gone by in our nation to where really both parties have lost sight of kind of those original founding theories, I think. And I'm wondering if we're at a point where, there needs to be almost a revolution that takes place within this country because Republicans have really lost sight of small government versus big government spending. And I love your analogy of who knows best how to spend your own money but you, yet we have a federal government that it's now an occupation to become a politician with no real experience in the private sector. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see that changing unless there's some big revolution. I hate to use the term revolution because I'm picturing guns and all that such, but almost a taking back of the federal government in some sense, to where it does go back to how you've described Republicans and Democrats.
Okay. Well,
I'm not advocating a Tea Party necessarily,
my perspective is there's still hope that the Republican Party can be influenced. Well, let me say, in politics, you never get a perfect solution, and you never get a perfect candidate, because it's a mixture of many different people. But it seems to me that the Republican Party, as I'm arguing here, today in the United States, is quite close to biblical principles on most of these issues. I think the Republican Party in the 2008 election was massively rebuked for overspending. And I think that most have learned their lesson and won't do that again. But, you know, that's a judgment call. Okay, so I'm going to pick up here next week. Okay. I was going to say one other thing to somebody here, but the person is gone, so. All right. I will come back next week and pick up here and try to say, now, what are the underlying reasons why the Democrats and Republicans hold these views? I have gone 3 minutes over when I'm supposed to be done, and so I'm going to dismiss us just with a prayer, and we're going to skip the hymn today, come back next week to sing the hymn. Our Father in heaven, we thank you that you are the sovereign Lord and ruler over nations and over this nation, that you raise up nations and then you destroy them at times through history, as Job 12:23 says. You make nations great, and then you lead them away. We pray for mercy on this nation, Lord, that you would lead our leaders, President Obama, Vice President Biden, members of the Congress. Give them wisdom to understand and seek to follow your paths and your ways for the good of the nation. We pray that you would give us leaders year after year and election after election that will follow in your paths, and that this nation may yet go on for generations to come, being a beacon of light for others and a beacon of hope, and not perfect, Lord, for we are still sinners, but a nation that does much good for other nations through the world as well. We commit this into your hands. In Jesus' name, amen. See you next week.